Welcome to Sound Off with Lewis Woodard.
How can you not know who Lewis is? Oh my God, you hear his voice, you recognize who he is.
Wrapping up the day in sports in a fast-paced, high-energy atmosphere. You got an opinion? Bring it strong or don't bring it at all.
I can say anything I want. That's the beauty of this country.
Dial 843-652-3776 or Sound Off on Twitter at 1003TheTeam.
This is a special person.
Now, your host, Lewis Woodard.
Plenty of local and regional football to talk about, college and professionally. Shout out to high school. Conway gets the victory bell back for the first time in several seasons. Myrtle Beach had won 7 out of 8, so hats off to the kids at Conway for making that rivalry a little more interesting. Rivalries are always good when there's balance, right? And, you know, when South Carolina won 5 in a row, That wasn't too entertaining for the person who's not a Gamecock fan, right? You want rivalries to be balanced. I'm a North Carolina fan, and I want Duke to be good because I want that game to have juice when they play on TV. Like, is winning each individual game fun? Sure, but if they won 10 in a row, it just wouldn't be fun. It would cease to be the game of national interest if it became one-sided over a period of time. So congratulations to the kids over Conway. Jermaine Martin rushed for 3 touchdowns in the first half. He had a nice performance. This Cam Newton story fascinates me, but first of all, this is an awkward transition. I should be breaking news for you guys, although I don't really like breaking news. I like putting opinions on things after I've been able to analyze them, but we can get into this later in the show. The Panthers have traded a 6th round pick for Bears defensive end Jared Allen. So, a top 10 all-time pass rusher in terms of number of sacks over the course of his career, a poor fit for the Bears' 3-4 defense. The Panthers desperately in need of a pass rusher now that Charles Johnson is hurt, and nobody has really filled the Greg Hardy void. Their front four is not getting much pressure on folks. So they trade for Jared Allen. We'll get into that later in the show. 843-652-3776 is the number. The Panthers at 3-0 now are in a pretty nice spot. They get Tampa next week, which is a winnable game. Then they have a bye week, and they enter into the hardest 4-game stretch of their season on paper after that. That includes Seattle, Green Bay, Indianapolis, and Philadelphia. But the Colts and the Eagles are not what people thought they were going to be preseason. So you take a look at the Panthers' schedule. They're 3-0 now, and their schedule looks a lot more winnable than it did 2, 3, 4 weeks ago when you're taking a look at it before the season. Certain of these games are not as intimidating as they once were. And coming off of their 27-22 win over the Saints, not only was Josh Norman's play electric, we're going to get into the play call of that for Mick Mixon later in the show. That was one of the best plays on the football I've seen watching just any level of football. And it's awesome when Josh Norman, someone who played for Coastal Carolina, can do it for the Carolina Panthers. That's really neat to watch on television. But Cam Newton's performance was one of the best that I can remember him having as a professional. He just had command of the offense. He connected on 65% of his passes. He got a number of different receivers involved. Threw for over 300 yards, threw for 2 touchdowns, rushed for 1. So he accounted for 3 touchdowns. He didn't turn the ball over. And he did all of that with, after Greg Olsen, his best playmaker being Ted Ginn, a guy who couldn't make a lot of 53-man rosters as a receiver. Maybe when you throw in his return skills, he's more desirable. But there's no doubt that with his receiving core, Cam Newton's getting a lot done with not an awful lot. And I think this is kind of the moment where, in his professional career, you take a look at him, you say he's made 2 consecutive playoffs, he's 3-0 this season, and he's getting a lot out of a very poor receiving core. I think this is where you start to tip the cap and say, okay, he is one of the top half of the NFL kind of quarterbacks, if not fringe of the top 10. And he is winning more of my respect. I mean, I've always been a fan of the Carolina Panthers, but as a quarterback, I thought he really showed me a lot on Sunday. And I don't know what it is about Cam's personality. I don't know whether it's his flamboyance, the fact that he has a designer fashion line, the icon entertainer comments, his exit from the University of Florida, his first down dance, his Superman dance. I don't know what it is, or if it's all of those things tied together. I'm not sure how much of it's race, but it's clear that he makes people assume the worst of him. It's clear that, whereas someone, we talked about this last week with Andrew Luck, people are willing to give Andrew Luck the benefit of the doubt in every circumstance, people are going to take a look at what Cam Newton does and assume the worst in every circumstance. And that's why I am so fascinated by that situation with Ed Hockley. Late in the game, Cam Newton is running out of bounds. He's trying to throw the football away. And Tyler Davidson, the Saints defensive tackle, hits him late on the sideline. It was a borderline 50-50 late hit roughing the passer call. Sometimes you're used to a quarterback getting it. Sometimes one doesn't. And Cam doesn't get the flag. I'm not totally surprised. Cam gets up, has a conversation with Ed Hockley. And it was abundantly clear that, I mean, Cam grimaced and looked at him and had his hands up like, are you kidding me? It was really, really clear that Hockley said something to him that made him upset, that was not a run-of-the-mill, I should have gotten that flag conversation. And according to Cam in his post-game press conference afterwards, Ed Hockley told him he had not been in the NFL long enough to get that call.
Cam, you're not old enough to get that call. So I'm looking at him like, what? Jesus, I didn't think you had to have seniority to get a personal foul or anything like that. I'm ticked off, really. You know, just the fact that it's kind of, one, did he miss the call? If he would have said he missed the call, okay, that's one thing. But for his response to be what it was, I'm not old enough to get that call. Jeez. So heaven forbid he gets any rookies. You know, they're going to have a long day, man.
Now, Hockley, through an NFL representative, has denied saying that he said that, basically. He has denied saying that Cam wasn't old enough to get that call. And it's always uncomfortable in sports when you bring in the subjectivity of officials. That's why we've added so much instant replay to modern sports, because football, basketball, baseball, you name it, we are obsessed with this ideal of fairness in American sports. And we want to think that nothing is fixed, that subjectivity doesn't come into play, that there couldn't be rogue officials that are gambling on games that simply just don't like one player or another. I mean, Tim Donaghy, the NBA official who was gambling on games, I mean, he has said he would bet games certain ways that Allen Iverson was playing in because he knew certain officials loved and hated Allen Iverson. And he just knew if Iverson was playing in a game where an official loved him, he was going to get more free throws, because so much of Allen Iverson's game involved getting into the lane and getting to the basket. Allen Iverson wasn't 6 feet tall. I mean, he's probably 160 pounds. If you allow a lot of contact with Iverson, he couldn't score very well. But if someone brushes him on the way to the basket and he gets two free throws, well, then you can't keep him under 40 points. So, and you see the same thing with James Harden, how a game is officiated with the Rockets' star shooting guard. Directly results in how well he plays. Right? If people aren't giving him contact and letting him get on the line, he just can't score. And that's subjectivity. That's something that instant replay will never fix. And there we were on Sunday with a 50-50 call that Cam just flat out didn't get. And we would like to think that in the NFL that there would be a cut and dry scenario, that it wouldn't have anything to do with the jersey he was wearing, the color of his skin, how many years he had been in the NFL, any of these things. But it's a snap judgment for Ed Hockley. And for whatever reason, I think Ed Hockley just doesn't like Cam Newton. And I think he's just like, maybe I'd give Rodgers that call. Maybe I'd give Brady that call. Not Newton. Get up, Newton. The other thing is, and I wonder this sometimes with regard to players in basketball a lot. Like, you used to hear Shaq complain about this a lot, and Dwight Howard complains about it a lot. How much contact those guys take before a whistle is called, right? If Shaq has the ball in the paint and a little guard runs up, let's say Steve Nash just runs up and hacks him at the arm, you know, he's not going to get that foul call, right? Because you look at someone 7'2", 325 pounds, and you're just like, oh, like, he can handle it. Also, you can't guard him without a little bit of contact, otherwise just dunking, right? And so, whereas where that little guard, whether it's Iverson or Nash, they're underneath the basket, they get a little bit of contact, they're on the free throw line. Things are just officiated differently. And I wonder with Cam, because of his size, 6'5", 250, if someone pushes him down late, the official's like, oh, he can handle it. Just have him get back up. But just watching the play and knowing how people just oddly react to Cam Newton as an individual, I kind of believe Cam's version of the events, that Hockley told him that he wasn't old enough to get that call. And I think that's really embarrassing for an NFL official that is basically the face of NFL officiating. right? I mean, Ed Hockley in The Gun Show, everyone's obsessed with his biceps and how he, flaunts his arms when he's doing calls on the field. He's the most famous NFL referee there is. And I think that he just didn't like Cam Newton, didn't give him that call. It's one thing to feel that way, but it's another thing when you actually tell a star player that he didn't get that call for a subjective reason, like his, well, I guess age isn't subjective. Like, it's cut and dry. Everybody knows how old Cam is. But Cam can't impact that, right? I mean, he's been in the NFL for 5 years. I mean, at what point does he get that call when he's been in the NFL for 10 years? It just seemed like an absurd situation to me that the commissioner's office, I hope they have a stern talking to with Ed Hockley. You can't behave like that in an NFL game, particularly one that was that close. I mean, if Josh Norman doesn't make that play and that ball's caught in the end zone, the Saints win that. The Saints win that game. I mean, that was a game in which one play totally changed the balance of the football game. And as the Panthers made the playoffs last year at 7-8-1, one game can change whether or not you're in the playoffs. I mean, one play like that can really cause a lot of dominoes to fall in different ways. And I thought that was just a really unprofessional moment. And maybe Cam Newton should have internalized that and not brought it up in a press conference, but I'm glad he did. Because if Hockley actually said that to him, that's unprofessional. And with everything that's at stake in these NFL games, as much as everybody is getting paid, I mean, it's the least thing we can do is expect that fairness is strived for. As I said, there's always going to be some subjectivity in who gets a call and who doesn't, but you can't have a guy who is an NFL official blatantly telling a player, like, yeah, I would have given you that call if you were a little bit older. You just can't have him saying that out loud in a competition. And I don't expect Hockley to get suspended, but I hope at least the NFL has a conversation with him behind closed doors and said, man, you can't say something like that again. 843-652-3776 is the number. How'd you feel about that call, whether or not Cam should have gotten it, and Hockley's explanation afterwards? Also, with the Panthers trading for Jared Allen right before the show started, it is tough to take a look at this trade and really have a strong feeling about it one way or another, because it really depends on how well, with the trade for a future late-round draft pick, it really depends on how well your team scouts and the general manager. And Dave Gettleman, the general manager, knows how well Dave Gettleman, the general manager, picks. And so he knows exactly what he's doing when he trades for Jared Allen. But Jared Allen is 34 years old. He does not have much left in the tank, but the Panthers just need him to come in and rush the passer a little bit. And they're all they're giving up. He's not on the hook for any money next year. If they don't want him to, they can release him. And it's a sixth-round draft pick. And it's interesting to me, because it seems like everything with the Panthers has been clearing the cap for the future, for the Keekly-Newton future. Almost getting rid of a future asset for a short-term gain move that they have made. And it's the first splash move that they made with Dave Gettleman, other than extending guys that they already have. So I'm very interested in this as an idea. Like, it seems way flashier than the boring Dave Gettleman. And taking a look at it, I instantly liked it. I'm like, okay, they need help for their front four. But the more I think about this, I'm thinking, okay, this is a team that's going to make the playoffs but probably isn't going to win a Super Bowl, and you have no idea what that sixth-round draft pick could turn into. I mean, Josh Norman was a fifth-round pick. I mean, you could easily have seen the Panthers trading that fifth-round pick his year for a veteran that could contribute like Jared Allen and not really thought anything of it. And so it becomes very dangerous to evaluate a potential long-term asset for a short-term rental. 843-652-3776. But we do have Paul on the line right now. Paul, what did you make of Cam Newton versus Ed Hockley?
Well, Ed Hockley seems to be a guy that wants the attention on himself all the time. I think he does have a problem with Cam, but more importantly, not just Cam Newton, but if you look at the NFL as a whole, if you look at how Ben Roethlisberger got hit and hurt, the officials don't seem to protect him. But if that had been Tom Brady, there would have been so many flags on the field, you could have walked across the field without touching grass. It just seems that certain quarterbacks are protected more than others, and I think Cam falls into that situation because he is big and strong, just like a Ben Roethlisberger. And I think, you know, officials are like, well, you can take it, like your Shaq analogy.
Yeah, that's. I think that that has something to do with it. I think because his reckless as Cam plays sometimes in the run game, that there is this idea that he's going to get hit hard all the time. And so when he gets hit hard, perhaps illegally in the pocket, maybe people are less likely to throw the flag because they're like, oh, it's just Cam Newton getting hit again. They're so used to that. And I think your Big Ben analogy is spot on because he does really seem to get clobbered in a way that very few quarterbacks do.
Yeah, and they never throw a flag.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, I think that with Brady, although I don't know that the NFL was going to give him any favors from now on, but I do agree with you, Paul. Appreciate the call that Brady and some other quarterbacks would be more likely to get that flag than Cam was. And Hockey Lee, like any official that makes officiating a performance art, makes me very uncomfortable. Right, like TV Ted Valentine in basketball. I mean, there are officials in every sport that you're like, okay, this guy is about more than just this guy is a part of the game. He's one of the actors in the game, and a really good official just keeps the performance fair. He does not become a part of the performance.
He's no Joey Crawford.
He's just Joey Crawford. Yeah, that's another one, Brian. I don't really know that we should know referees' names. Right, because if we know their name, they've done something. Like, I guess I know Jim Joyce's name because he blew that Galarraga perfect game, but that's the only reason why I know his name. And it turns out he's an excellent umpire and a classy guy. But other than that, I mean, it's hard to know somebody's name unless they're involved in a controversy. And the reason we know Hockey Lee's name is because he makes such a big show of making every call, like he's taking people to the gun show every time he's just announcing a first down.
Can't hate him for being ripped.
You know, hey. You know what? More power to him. I mean, I try to do my thing in the gym as well. But it really rubs me the wrong way. And maybe I'm just a defensive Carolina Panther fan that just all too often in conversations is forced to defend Cam Newton for something he's done in the past or something that he does. I mean, I'll admit with Cam, I wish he didn't do a dance every time he did a first down because I want Cam to move those chains all the time. And, you know, if you want to celebrate touchdowns, that's cool. First downs, let's tone that down a little bit. There are some things that I don't like about him. But in general, I think the way that the public behaves towards him is not fair in a lot of ways. I mean, evaluating him as a quarterback, I think he gets shafted in a lot of these discussions because people are just uncomfortable with some aspect of his personality. And I think that whereas he does not get the benefit of the doubt a lot, someone like a Luck or Rodgers, anytime they throw an interception, it's like, well, Rodgers doesn't throw interceptions. But Luck right now especially, it's like, oh, his offensive line isn't good. His receiver ran the wrong route. Cam throws an interception, and it's, oh, he's in year four. He's in year five. He hasn't improved. And I think that some element of that is mixed into the Hockey Lee situation. 843-652-3776. Dan is on the line. Dan, what do you have for us?
Yes, I think a lot of people do have a fair, unfair assessment of Cam Newton. He has done a lot better. I'll bring that one thing up. He did. It was in the news that he went to a Halloween party for a terminally ill child one night last week. So he's got a lot of good in him. He goes and does charitable actions like that. So off the field, he's done very well. Yes, he's a little cocky sometimes with some of his flashiness, but that's just Cam. He plays very well, and he does good things for people. As far as Ed Hockley, the referee, if I recall, isn't he the one who whipped on the coin flip the one Thanksgiving day between Pittsburgh and Detroit? And I think Detroit went and won the game. I think it was the Pittsburgh Jerome Bettis called heads, and Hockley Lee said it was tails. I can't quite remember, but he's been in the spotlight for a couple mishaps before. So I'm siding with Cam on this one.
Yeah, excellent points. Appreciate the call as well, Dan. I can't remember the coin flip situation with Hockey Lee. I know that Hockey Lee is a lawyer, and I know that he was kind of the face of the officials when they were holding out, so to speak, when they were having their collective bargaining dispute with the NFL and we had the replacement refs. And I know that, you know, he gets a lot of screen time because people make jokes about whether or not he's flexing or just delivering a normal call out in the field. But Dan brings up some interesting points about Cam. I haven't heard one person complain about anything he's done off the field in Charlotte, and I know a lot of people that work in media in Charlotte. I know there's some concern about his aloofness, whether or not his teammates love him or are loyal to him, that kind of weird stuff that occasionally you hear coming out of locker rooms. But in terms of off the field, I mean, he hasn't done a thing. I mean, he stole the laptop in Florida. He had some academic dishonesty issues at Florida, but he paid the price for that. He went to Blinn Junior College. You think they've got nice facilities at Blinn Junior College? I mean, he had to earn his way back into the SEC. And I'm just not one of those guys that takes a small offense from 10 years ago, 8 years ago, and acts like that's part of his character today. I mean, he paid the price for that, and he has been a class act that we know of in the NFL, everything that we can see. I mean, I don't know why people still wouldn't like the guy. I mean, is it the touchdown dance? Is it the first down dance? Is it the clothing line? I mean, it is kind of funny seeing him up on TV bringing out a legitimate beef against Ed Hockley wearing a blazer that's camouflage. You know, he wears capri pants. I mean, there's some people just are uncomfortable with that much expression of personality.
I think maybe the whole thing just got, maybe he did say it, but maybe he just took it out of context because, I mean, he's questioning his job, which is kind of annoying if you've ever had your job questioned before. And he's clearly out of the pocket, so I don't know why he'd get roughly.
Brian, what are you trying to say about me?
What?
I question your job?
No. See, right there. That's what he has misinterpreted. So maybe he's like, oh, you're not old enough to get that call, like just joking to Cam. And obviously Cam probably took it seriously, and now we have beef.
Yeah, I just don't think that's very professional. And I think that someone like Ed Hockley, who is a lawyer, should be more careful with what he says in the middle of a competition in which fairness is not what's assumed, but that's the job he's tasked with. And indicating there's some sliding scale of justice depending on how old you are, I think that's really unprofessional. And I think Cam, some people were saying like Cam shouldn't have brought this to the media because there's no way he's going to win this, quote, battle. I mean, yeah, if you want to expose Hockley so he gets a talking to from the NFL, I think that's a win for Cam. 843-652-3776. If, like Paul and Dan, you guys want to get in the mix, give us a call. Also, we're going to get into the Josh Norman play and what that says about his future. Hint, cha-ching. And plenty to get into with Spurrier's comments on Lorenzo Nunez's performance and also Coastal Carolina. Should they be the top-ranked team in the FCS? Coach Moglia had some stern words about his team and his defense after the win over Bryant this past weekend. So a lot of local and regional football to get into. Hit us up and stay with us.
Welcome back to Sound Off. Call 843-652-3776 and get loose.
Lewis Woodard, Brian Nelson hanging out with you guys. Brian, I do question your job on a regular basis. I question your music selections. But not this one. I'm feeling the outcast right now. I don't ever mean it, Brian. You know that's not meant to be hurtful, right?
It's okay. Yeah. I'm not too offended by you.
I mean,
people don't like the same music. It's all right.
in the Hockley conversation, it seemed like you had some tension about people questioning your job, and I just wanted to make sure that wasn't me.
Oh, no. Okay. I'm just saying it gets annoying when people do question your job.
All right. 843-652-3776, and this is the number. Interesting comments from Paul and Dan earlier, if you guys want to get in the mix on the Cam conversation with Hockley. Why it is that people don't seem to give him the benefit of the doubt. I mean, he hasn't had any legal problems since becoming a professional. He seems to, as Dan points out, go out of his way to do nice things in the Charlotte community. He has not, I mean, besides a training camp fight with Josh Norman, which is just that, a training camp fight, seems like he has been a stand-up guy in Charlotte. I don't understand why he continues to be that guy in conversations. I don't know what is controversial about him other than his constant display of his personality, which is something that sometimes in America we celebrate and sometimes we criticize. We just haven't decided which one we like. I think it depends on if we like a person, then we decide that it's cool, right? Like, we like Tim Duncan, so his uninteresting, head-down, workman-like approach to five rings, that, you know, taking less money, all of that stuff is cool, right? I mean, that is something that everybody praises. And then at the same time, another athlete like, I guess Muhammad Ali comes to mind as someone who is defined by expressing his personality. I mean, he's revered for totally other reasons. I guess maybe I wasn't alive during his prime. I guess he was way more controversial in his prime. But it seems like everything you hear now is 100%. positive. Greg tweets us at 1003 the team. Cam has not so good passed and shows his backside after each first down, needs to tone it down. And Greg, that is the one thing that if I were advising Cam that I would ask him to stop doing, is because first downs happen so frequently in a football game, let's focus on getting the team downfield and not celebrate each minor success like that. And especially when you're losing by two scores, which hasn't happened yet this season, it is not the greatest look when he does the first down point. But I don't mind the passion after making a good play, just, you know, the constant first down symbol is the thing that I would change or I would ask him to. But I don't think that's enough for him to be that guy that doesn't get the benefit of the doubt. I mean, there are clearly people in the NFL doing far worse things than him. Unrelated, Justin hits us up at 1003 the team. Just saw AP highlights. OMG, imagine what the Panthers would be with Cam and AP. I'd trade Stewart in a first-round pick right now. I don't think the Minnesota Vikings would do that deal. I'm not sure that they would or wouldn't, but they stayed with Adrian Peterson through the child abuse thing. Like, I think that they're kind of all in on him being a legacy Minnesota Viking, and he's still good.
And you're talking about cap implications with Jared Allen. What would it be with Peterson? Jeez.
Yeah, that would be the most un-Panthers thing ever to offer that trade. But that would be all in. And you know what's interesting? In the offseason, when teams were calling Minnesota and inquiring about AP, I don't know if any first-round picks were on the table. I don't know what the best offer they got was. But they pretty consistently had a, now we're not looking to trade AP stance. Because Peterson wanted to get out there for a little bit. Now, the interesting thing is, I think Teddy Bridgewater's pretty good. Now, can he get good enough while AP is still at the fringe of his prime for them to do something together is the question. It seems like there's too many years in between them for both of them to be hot at the same time.
Panther fans will just have to wait for Fournette to come out.
Yeah, my goodness, Leonard Fournette.
Man-child.
I mean, yes. He has, for seven consecutive halves of football, Leonard Fournette has a minimum of 50 yards and a minimum of one touchdown in each consecutive half. That means he hasn't even had a half where he wasn't dominant, right? I mean, he has 687 rushing yards through three games this year. Through three games. Because remember, LSU had their first game of the season rained out. And Les Miles said he was going to watch the film. It was one of the best jokes I've heard recently. But hey, my goodness, not to totally go sideways down the college football discussion, but I do not envy the Gamecocks defense that has to see him in 2 weeks. I do not envy them.
Yeah, and he's going to put up the number. He's going to play like Eastern Michigan or something this week. He's going to be over 200 again.
Yeah, Syracuse, the Orange, did not have much for him. Although that game is closer than you might have expected.
Yeah.
Fournette definitely got his. Now back to the Panthers discussion with Jared Allen. We certainly have room for the Cam Hockley discussion if you guys want to have it, 843-652-3776. But the trade for Jared Allen, really, how you view it depends on how you view your organization's ability to draft and building for the future. At some point in time, you got to put your chips at the center of the table and say, we have Cam Newton in his prime, we've got Luke Kuechly in his prime, let's try and do something. And then on the other hand, I can totally look at this deal and say, okay, well, a six-round pick isn't huge, but look at the guy who made the game-winning play. Look at the guy who, against Jacksonville, you could say had a game-winning pick six. I still think they probably win that game against Jacksonville without Norman, but who knows? Maybe Allen Robinson gets loose in that game, and Norman totally shut him down. Maybe they win. Maybe they lose against the Saints. They probably do lose without Josh Norman. I mean, this team, I do not think, is 3-0 without Josh Norman. And Norman was a fifth-round pick that it took 4 years to fully mature, 3.5 years to fully mature into a lockdown corner. I mean, we saw progress at the end of last season to the point where I was among the many Carolina Panthers fans saying, hey, please pay this gentleman before he goes out there and shows how much he's worth on a national stage. And he's doing just that right now. That's a fifth-round pick. And you see this all the time with baseball trades at the deadline. Like someone gets an all-star and gives up prospects, and it's like, well, you can't really go live and say this trade is a good or a bad one until you've seen 3 years down the road what the prospect could be. So you don't know what the Panthers would do with that sixth-round pick. I mean, it could be the value of the fifth-rounder that they spent on Josh Norman, or it could be as bad as the second-rounder they spent on Armani Edwards, right? I mean, you have no idea what they would do with that. So you're trading something that does not exist yet, a player that's to be selected in the sixth round of this year's draft, for somebody who can contribute right now.
I think it's a good move for a guy that's averaged almost 10 sacks a year, except for last year where he had a bad year in a defensive scheme that he doesn't really fit.
Right, but the new defense that he doesn't fit, the 3-4, is this year. I'm not sure what the Bears were running last year, but so he gets back to working in a 4-3. He had 5.5 sacks last year. He's 33, 34 years old. Maybe he has some juice left in his tank. I mean, maybe he'll be invigorated from going from an 0-3 team to a 3-0 team. I mean, suddenly, I mean, think about him. He's in his early 30s. He's probably thinking about concussions. He's probably thinking, hey, I'm already top 10 in sacks. Do I really need to play for a 1-15 team when I'm in my early 30s? He has to be amped about getting to come down to Carolina and potentially make a playoff run with the Panthers. And by the way, 75% of 3-0 teams make the playoffs. The Panthers have Tampa, then they have a bye week. And look, things are looking really good for them going into the bye 4-0. And there are some winnable games on the rest of that schedule. Now, the only thing that concerns me is I think Atlanta's legit. So can they have a good enough record to have a wild card?
I'm very excited to see Josh Norman versus Julio Jones with Norman playing the way he is right now.
Well, yeah, he played him really well last year. And we'll see if Julio reacts to that, because sometimes maybe a guy like Julio didn't go into that matchup and he's like, oh, you know, I don't know who Josh Norman is. He's going to know who he is this year. Huh? I mean, people nationally are going to know who Josh is. I mean, let's take a listen to Mick Mixon's call of that game-saving interception.
Short, Addison, Edwards, Latua lay the front. McCown backs up. McCown flicks a pass end zone, and it's jumped up, intercepted by Norman. Intercepted right side of the end zone. That could be your game winner.
It is your game winner.
You know what seems like kind of a useless phrase? Like ball skills. Like anytime you hear a football coach or you hear an analyst talk about ball skills, you're like, oh, that's just jargon. Just say the guy's got good hands. But really, I mean, isn't that the essence of ball skills, what Josh Norman did on that play? I mean, the way he was able to rotate in midair and see that in, haul it in. I mean, he made a play. He high-pointed that like he was a receiver. And while absolutely just covering that guy like a glove, I mean, it was a perfect play. It really showcased his athleticism, and it saved the game for Carolina. And I just don't see how he makes a dime less than $10 million a year. And I don't know if the Panthers have that kind of cap space or if Dave Gettleman wants to redo his philosophy, which is draft the big guys up front, beef up your front seven so you can rush the passer, specifically the front four, as evidenced by his first two draft picks in Carolina being defensive tackle Starlo Tulele and Kaywon Short. He's put a high pick into Coney Ealy on the edge. I mean, that's what he likes to draft because he thinks those guys make the secondary look good, except this year, you can't say that Josh Norman is getting protected by a good front four because it didn't get much in terms of pass rush. That's why they need to bring Jared Allen in.
I think they're going to have to, especially if he continues at this rate and plays this consistently, I think they have to pay him. To get that good of a premier cornerback in the league is crucial.
To take a look at the top 10 NFL cornerback salaries in terms of cap hit, I'm taking a look at SpotTrack.com right now. Revis is making $16 million. I'm not saying Norman should make that. But number 10, Ladarius Webb, is making $9.2 million this year. I could definitely see Josh Norman getting a healthy chunk guaranteed in something like 3 years, $30 million. I could definitely see him getting that because of how old he is, the improvement curve that he's shown in his 4 years in Carolina, and some of the plays he's making this year are just jaw-dropping. And you look at the matchups that he's having with premier number one receivers from the second half of last season into this year. I mean, what did DeAndre Hopkins do against him? Not much. What did Allen Robinson do against him? Not much. Those guys had way bigger weeks against the corners they saw before and after him. Julio Jones from last year. And one thing I'm really looking forward to seeing him play against ODB at the end of the season. I mean, he's going to have more of his opportunities, and each week he keeps on making plays. And I don't know what his crew asked the Panthers, what his agent asked the Panthers for in the offseason, or whether it's the practice fights with Steve Smith and Cam Newton or any of that stuff. I have no idea why they would be reluctant to invest in Josh. Maybe it's just Gettleman's philosophy. But it's clear that with his level of play right now, someone is going to invest in him. It's just a matter of whether the Panthers have the cap space to do that or not.
Well, I'm looking at their space right now for this year, and it's only at about $5.7 million, so they're definitely going to have to make some sort of moves if they want to keep him. I mean, obviously the cap will go up, but I think maybe letting go of Jonathan Stewart or I don't know what his contract situation looks like, but looking at this, it says his contract's 5% of the cap space.
Yeah, I'm not prepared to have that discussion right now in terms of who's got dead money, what's tied into signing bonuses, cap hits. The NFL landscape is very confusing with contracts. 843-652-3776 is the number. Going to get into Coastal Carolina next segment because I thought the win over Bryant showed some grit from the Chanticleers, really showed some poise, particularly from the offense when they were down 10-0. The defense shut out Bryant in the second half after giving up a lot of yards in the first. There were things to like, but visually that did not look like a Chanticleer team from the past year or two. It did not look like a number one team. And I thought some of Coach Moglia's comments afterwards were very interesting. We'll get into that next. Back on Sports Radio, 100.3 The Team. I'm Lewis Woodard. Getting into a little Coastal Carolina discussion right now. The number one Chanticleers played in front of another packed house, officially around 10,300 seats sold, and that's all the tickets they can allot. So far, the first two home games sellouts. So good news for those who are concerned about the FBS move. And it was an uneven performance for the Chanticleers. In two of their first three games, they had given up 500 yards of offense. Not good for the defense. I mean, 500 yards on defense, two opposing offenses. And it looked like more of the same against Bryant. It was 17-17 tie at the half after Bryant got out to a 10-0 lead. And they put up 252 yards in the Chanticleers in the first half. And then in the second half, Coastal really limited them, held them to 0 points, and ends up winning by the score of 31 or 34-17. I need to double-check that here in a second. But they end up dominating the second half and winning comfortably. But it is interesting. When you hear Coach Mowgli in the post-game press conference, he does not sound exuberant like the coach of a number one team. And I know a lot of coaches will always harp on that they're not a finished product, that they're trying to play well at the right time. There's all these things they need to work on. There is a different tone, in my opinion, than a coach being a perfectionist. I think there is a little bit of concern here.
There's a tendency sometimes to say, all right, that defense is not good against that, and then you get away from it. Bad strategy, bad philosophy. It's not the way we need to approach it. The way we need to approach it is, what was the reason we had a breakdown? And if we can solve for that breakdown, we're going to be okay. To just dismiss it as the defense doesn't hold up is not good enough. There was probably somebody made a mistake, had the wrong position, the wrong fundamentals, the wrong technique. May have had a bust in terms of responsibility. The more you add, the greater the probability you're going to have mistakes. So the objective this week was to have less stuff. We may not have as many perfect things, but we're going to do a better job in execution. I got to really see where we were in the execution. I'm excited to look at the film on defense.
So he definitely raised his voice more, and he was more animated when talking about the defense. And in the Western Illinois game before that, they had some breakdowns in the secondary. They had some blown coverages, and there was another one out there against Bryant that led to points in the first half. And those are just the kind of things that you're not used to seeing out of Coastal Carolina. And heading into this week, Coach Moglia made it clear that they were trying to simplify some of the calls and just allowing guys to play and play fast instead of having them be confused out there on defense. And that's going to be the main question heading into this Wednesday press conference with Coach Moglia is, after you've had time to look at the film, was there improvement on the defense in the second half? I mean, were there good adjustments? Is this defense really improving? And he's, I guess after being very passionate in talking about simplifying so guys don't blow coverages, he did say he was excited to see the film. But in general, his variation of the coaching cliche, we've got potential, but we've got some stuff to work on. This is what I'm talking about. There is concern in his voice.
I still think we're a team that's got some potential, but we're not where we need to be yet. We make too many mistakes in critical times offensively, just too many penalties that wind up hurting us. From a defensive perspective, we're not nearly where we all would have hoped we were going to be by this time of the season. But we will focus on trying to make sure we get those things taken care of. And I couldn't be more pleased with special teams. Special teams had a big game tonight. We won last week because of our special teams. So I'm delighted we're number one in the nation. I'm delighted we're 4-0, but we're not near where we got to be.
And Coach Mowgli is always measuring things not by outcomes of wins and losses, but how his team is playing. And you can hear there the defense is behind schedule, behind what he expected. And they haven't played a ranked FCS team yet. I mean, Furman might do some things by the end of the year. Western Illinois might do some things by the end of the year. But in terms of being recognized in the polls by either the coaches or the media right now, they have not played a top 25 team. And they've had some close skates, and they've had some instances where their defense hasn't been looking great. And maybe 3 or 4 weeks from now, we'll take a look back at the schedule and say, you know what, they played a tougher slate than we thought. But as of right now, the way the defense has played against that schedule, not having seen a ranked team yet, I think you got to say, okay, that's a little underwhelming. And hearing Coach Mowgli essentially say that they're behind schedule with the defense is a little concerning. Now, I will say, in terms of good things, the defense didn't allow a point in the second half. And then the offense really answered the call after being down 10-0. I mean, if they didn't put more points on the board, the game could have gotten out of hand. And Alex Ross is someone that we joke about in the local media that all he does is you know, play football and watch film. He seems almost like a robot because we applaud the Terminator music for Jordan Spieth. Alex Ross is a Terminator. Like, the guy hurts his ankle, plays every snap, figures out some way to win. I'm not sure how many human parts versus computer parts he has. But if you hear him talk about their calmness when they were down 10-0, you understand why they were able to come back and score points.
We knew that it was going to be a long game, and that wasn't going to stop us. So I think as a group, we were pretty calm, we were pretty focused, and we didn't let that get to us. We knew that we were going to be able to drive down the field and score points, and we were just patient.
He could have been talking about anything. I mean, that guy and that kind of attitude toward losing a football game and that kind of approach, just going out there and continuing to play well and eventually the score will flip. I mean, that's why he's been so successful. I mean, that's the kind of attitude you want for somebody that's under center in a situation like that, someone who's not going to be overly emotional or feel like this one drive is key in terms of getting them back in the game. He was just able to patiently get them back in, and he seemed like he still had an ankle issue a little bit out there, but he was able to stretch the field this week. So, you know, his impact on the team is immeasurable. I mean, if you have a quarterback that's out there panicking, it becomes that much harder to operate, and there's like zero panic in that dude. I mean, I don't know what he gets excited about. I mean, there's one play against South Carolina State where South Carolina State hit him a couple of times early in that game. I mean, really teed off on him. And he threw a ball to the right sideline to John Israel before he was open. It was just a perfectly thrown football. As he released, he got smashed, like right as he threw it. And Israel ends up scoring the touchdown on that throw because he gets open as the football's in the air. It's a really nice anticipation throw. Didn't have any fear of the pass rush. And Alex just hung out on the turf and didn't see that it was a touchdown and just kind of casually picked himself up and brushed himself off. And I was like, man, if that kid, if he just had another 2 or 3 inches, 20 pounds, something like that, just a little more size, I think he'd be a legitimate pro prospect. But it's just that much harder. I mean, people point to Russell Wilson, but that's the exception. That's not the rule, man. You know?
Our run game, though, is phenomenal.
Yes.
I've never seen anything like
yes,
this.
Yes, Brian, I'm glad you pointed that out. That was another takeaway that I had. D'Angelo Henderson's getting all the publicity right now, as he deserves. Not only does he have the crazy statistics, but he has the jaw-dropping SportsCenter top 10-style cutbacks. I mean, he can really make people look like idiots in the open field. A lot of fun to watch. But Oshamar Abercrombie comes in, and he's like their closer. Like, he's coming out, like he's Aroldis Chapman. He's coming out in the field. He's throwing heat, man. They give that guy some fourth-quarter carries. He's got a much bigger body than Henderson, and he was bowling people over. He had a 22-yard touchdown run through the middle of the defense. I mean, there was no juke to that. It was just hammer. So, you know, as far as backfield, quarterback, and two running backs, they're about as good as anybody in the FCS. Just concerned about that defense. Anyways, 843-652-3776. Going to get into some of Spurrier's thoughts on Nunez as we round out the show. We do have time for a last-minute call if one of you guys wants to get in the mix about Cam or Coastal Carolina. This is Sound Off. Back on Sound Off Sports Radio 100.3 The Team. Lewis Woodard, Brian Nelson hanging out with you guys. As we do each and every Monday through Friday, 5 through 6 p.m. We are presented in part by Gordon Biersch. They have their new Oktoberfest menu out, which of course includes their Fest beer, which is an amber lager with a slightly sweet toasted maltiness balanced by the subtle spice of German Herzbrucker hops. like every beer. At Gordon Biersch, the Fest beer is a German-style lager crafted on-site using only the finest malted barley hops, yeast, and pure filtered water.
That menu looked delicious, by
the
way.
Did I pronounce Hersbrucker? Hersbrucker? You know, I never took German. All I know is when beer is delicious.
Yeah, I did Spanish.
I don't feel like I need to pronounce it to appreciate how it tastes. Right? I'm always going to struggle with that. Hersbrucker hops.
That sounded good.
Yeah, Oktoberfest menu at Gordon Biersch. It's here right now. Check it out. Now, I'm having clock management issues today. My computer's glitching over here. It's trying to tell me it's 5:40. That's why I went super long on that last segment. I'm like Eli Manning over here. Brian's having to whisper things in my headset telling me to go to break. So hopefully we don't talk through the Joe Moglia show, which is next, live from Buffalo Wild Wings and Carolina Forest. Joe Cashin hosting it as usual. And I'll tell you the thing that I really enjoy listening to this every Monday on my drive home, the Joe Moglia show. Coach Moglia isn't being interviewed all the time. He is sometimes interviewing. Like, he pulls players on and he starts asking them questions, and he understands what the importance of good radio is, storytelling. And he seems to really embrace the idea that he is being an entertainer, not just doing something that he gets paid for, right? Because, you know, frankly, money shouldn't mean all that much. The money that he's probably making off his radio show probably didn't mean that much to him. Real quickly, I thought that Nunez's performance was solid against Central Florida. I think the Gamecocks needing as much time and energy as they did to put down Central Florida as a team was concerning. But in terms of getting him the amount of reps he needs to have better command over the passing offense and the yards and touchdowns he was able to account for, I think he made some nice plays. I think in general, I think you look at the day as a success, even though at times during it, it wasn't the most comfortable thing ever. And Spurrier really touches on that and says that they needed him to win.
Looking back on the game yesterday, I remember saying Lorenzo Nunez doesn't have to win the game for us. It's a team event. Just take care of the ball, play smart. But it turned out, I think I was wrong. I think he had to win the game for us. He accounted for 220 of our 400 yards of offense. And watching the tape of the game, young man played very well. Threw a lot of good passes and certainly took care of the ball well.
And he's going to need to make some serious plays if they're going to win Missouri and LSU these next 2 weeks. I think they're going to beat the Citadel. I think they're going to beat Vanderbilt, although Vanderbilt gave Ole Miss all they bargained for and more on the road last weekend. So I don't know that that's as big of a gimme as they think, but that gets you to 4. And then you look at the remaining schedule. You've got Florida. You got Tennessee. You got Missouri. You got Ole Miss. I mean, not Ole Miss. You got LSU is what I was trying to say there. And you got Clemson. I mean, you got to come up with 2 wins in a lot of those really tough-looking games. I mean, South Carolina and Missouri have had some entertaining contests lately. And Matty Mock has not developed into what a lot of people thought he would be when he had a couple of nice games filling in for the player James Franklin, not the coach James Franklin, 2 years ago. He was one of those guys that people thought, hey, he's a returning SEC quarterback. He'll be the class of the league. Not so much this year. So they might have an opportunity to win that game, but seeing what it took to put away Central Florida, I wouldn't bet on it. I mean, if crazier things have happened, I mean, heck, Missouri lost to Indiana last year. I mean, that hasn't been the most game-to-game consistent program in the world. I would be astonished if they were able to beat LSU and Leonard Fournette coming into Columbia just because the run game travels, right? I mean, I can guarantee that guy's going to go for at least $150. But they got to figure out how to come up with 2 wins in that section of their schedule to end up going to a bowl game and not screw up Vanderbilt. I mean, that's, you know, they held serve against Central Florida. They needed to win that game to keep their hopes of making a bowl game alive. So they didn't screw it up. Nunez showed some flashes, got some game reps in a safe setting where they weren't going to lose, although at times it looked dicey. But anyways, I think that for them is a positive. All right, the Joe Moglia Show is coming up next right here on Sports Radio 100.3 The Team. Very interested to hear what Coach Moglia has to say about the defense's effort. Perhaps he's had a chance to crack open the film, and I'm sure Joe Cashin will ask him about that. And he was also a little concerned with the penalties on offense. So Coach Moglia's recap of the game, I'm sure, and what he's looking forward to this week. Excellent insight, as always, you can guess from Coach. It's coming up next.